Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. I hope everybody had a great weekend. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org and RepublicReview.org. And I'm sure everybody was captivated by the news that really isn't going anywhere. This is going to take a long... All of these types of events are just long train wrecks, and the carnage and everything else we get to witness every minute detail. Unless we decide to say, you know what, there's way too many important things that we've got to get done. And instead of allowing the circus maximus of the campaign, and instead of allowing this entertainment value of news to cycle through, then, we're not going to get anything done. It's kind of like just going to work and talking about the football game all day, or talking about the collusion or whatever the grapefruit du jour, as Jerry Doyle used to call it, how everybody would just roll out the grapefruit and go, look at this, look at what's happened, and just look at it from every angle. And we just become obsessed by these types of events. Anyway, we'll talk about it, and we'll just kind of brush over this, because remember that old scientific adage, results take time to measure. And the question is, we've been in this process for 2 years. The administration has had control of the DOJ, what they're going to be doing, investigating, control of the IRS. And the question is, why is the IRS still going after good people like Bob Schultz and still persisting in trying to shut down conservative organizations under his watch? Why is it that we still haven't seen the perp walk of Hillary and the rest of them? We'll talk about that in just a minute. And we're also going to get into the Virginia resolutions. So we, because I promised you that, because we need to really focus on what Madison and Jefferson did when they recognized the federal government had been stepping on their freedom of speech, and for the first time they stepped on the Constitution. So, like I said, we'll get into all of that. If you want to get involved, if you want to help, then there are ways of doing that. And so this is where I kind of grovel. I will tell you that we've got Red State Coffee coming, and we will be selling both the grind and, I believe, beans. There's not a lot of people that buy whole beans, but if you want the whole beans, then you can get them. I know a lot of coffee connoisseurs, the ones that really like the fresh grind is those who buy the beans. But anyway, nevertheless, I can't drink coffee. It gets me headaches. Anyway, if you want to help directly, we do have a GoFundMe campaign on the GoFundMe. And of course, it is called Reclaiming the Republic. The link to it is on reclaimingtherepublic.org. If you would like to contribute that way, there are many ways you can contribute. Again, it's not about money. It is about getting things done, getting people motivated and taking action. So if you've got a computer, you've got a phone, you have some literacy with both, just send me an email, info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. Other two good things that I'm supporting and trying to get you to support as well, because I think that we can multitask. We can go in, you know, different types of activities and or actions, and it doesn't take much to get involved with the Constitution Club. I saw us, I think it was Charlie Kirk, that posted the fact that California has, you know, some illegal alien representations like 8 or 9, which disenfranchises completely some of these other states. And actually, I've been telling you, and you've heard it on this radio show weeks ago, Keith Borders has been sending out that information on the Constitution Club. So why don't you get the front end of the news? Why don't you get the front end of the information and get involved with the group that's actually doing that work? And that is Keith Borders in the Constitution Club. Go sign up, constitutionclub.ning.com. The other organization is Our First Right. I think it's ourfirstright.org, but all of the links are there for both Keith and Our First Right on my other links, as well as my podcast page. At least I know for the First Rights that Our First Right is on my podcast page still, but the rest of them are on my other links page. So, as I always do, I did look in the news, and there is no sign that the federal government is going to relinquish any of its roles, responsibilities, and powers. And as a matter of fact, you see today, and you have been seeing this past year, the past few years, the federal government wants to take more and more grab of power. They want to have not only just control of the means of production, they want full political control. And what you see the progressives doing is precisely that. They want full political control. They want to silence you, and they are moving in breakneck speed to get this done. What are you doing to stop it? Well, let me thank you first before I jump into, the other little things that I think are important before we get into the Virginia resolution. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for letting other people know. Please keep spreading the word, because the more people that start tuning in and start understanding the real message, we cannot kill that beast if we allow ourselves to get distracted and trying to fight some myopic type of passion that just kind of gets our blood boiling, whether that be abortion, whether that be immigration. It is all unconstitutional. What we are facing is federal tyranny at such a level, it makes your eyes roll when you start recognizing how much unconstitutional government we're living under. So what that means is we're going to have to do it. GR is not the one that's going to be able to do this all by himself, and it's unfortunate that I'm doing most all the work anyway, and I need your help. I do have some people helping, and I appreciate that, but we need a lot of help. For us to really get on top of where we need to be, we need your help. So tuning in is one way, getting this message out and getting other people to start tuning in. One of the things you need to probably start telling people if they haven't tuned in yet is say, hey, how come you haven't tuned in? You're missing this, 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 and this. Anywho, I do try to provide plenty of meat for people, but thank you for tuning in. As you know, Red Pill Expo is coming up in June, June 7th, 8th, and 9th, and it is in Hartford, Connecticut. Are you going to be there? Who knows? I might be there. I would, if you're on the East Coast, this is an event, especially if you're within driving distance, and there's millions of people within driving distance. This should be a huge event, and it should be packed. I will tell you that last year, it was information overload. The stage was constantly filled with somebody that had, from medicine to politics to government to real estate and all sorts of things. Agenda 21, you really need to get involved. You need to start looking at how you can attend if you're that close, especially if you're within driving distance. Anywho, one of the things that I had kind of been railing on, and I told you that I have put up the link to the Como special, Seattle Dying, Seattle is Dying, or what have you. And the interesting thing is that they're not enforcing shoplifting. They're not enforcing all of these laws. But here's a question for you. Are they enforcing traffic citations? I mean, something that is so minor as traffic rolling through a red light, or making an unsafe change, lane change, or parking a car. Are they citing you in Seattle? You bet they are. It's about revenue. They know they can't collect a red cent out of these homeless drug addicts. So why even go down that path? But they sure are going after you, the producers that are parking, living there, and so forth. This, as far as I'm concerned, sends the message that they are there to protect these people who are, if you want to just call them a scourge or what have you, these people that have allowed themselves to be succumbed by their education system and by society to just immerse themselves in drugs. It's pretty sad where they've given them the pass, but the producer and so forth, they're still taking every pound of flesh they can out of you. That's what progressives and the communists are doing. That's what they're doing to this nation. What are you going to do? What's it going to take to start getting involved? They know that you've got money, and they will hurt you, and they'll come after you. They'll put bench warrants on you if you don't pay your parking tickets. Really? Isn't that ironic? I also wanted to give you a little note on the religion of peace. I'm not sure if you heard this, but just today, 7 people were arrested by Pakistan police in connection to an abduction and forced religious conversion and an illegal marriage of 2 minor Hindu girls, according to the local media reports. Apparently, 2 teenagers, Ravina and Rina, 13 and 15, were taken by a group of influential Islamic men from their home in the Ghatki district in the Sindh province on the eve of Holi, a Hindu spring festival. And after these girls were kidnapped, they were forced to convert to Islam and get married against their will. And so we're at a hard break, but if this doesn't give you an indication of the paradigm of this religion of peace, I don't know what will. And we'll get back onto Judge Jeanine Pirro when we come back as far as how she went down in flames. And so please stay tuned. We'll be right back after this. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my 3 C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue. Hey, GR is not talking about Trump yet. No, I'll get there, folks. Believe me, I'll get there. The fact of the matter is that the Islamic religion, just like the progressive, just like communist, just... there is a plethora of organizations that have zero tolerance towards anything that is contrary to their objective. And so, unlike Christianity, that is very tolerant, very forgiving, why is it that this nation has slowly and methodically opened up its arms to anything and everything, even our enemies? We are mollycoddling our enemies here in America. We're giving our enemies, whether they be the progressive communists or what have you, we're giving them welfare so that they can not have to work, so that they can go and protest in the streets and join groups like Antifa and so forth. There is a reason why they are doing this. They are taking complete advantage. And as a matter of fact, Adam Weishaupt points out in 1776 in his charter that that's exactly what they planned on doing. They were going to use education as the mechanism and the tool, and they were going to leverage us by using tolerance and the principles of forgiveness and Christianity in waging a ideological war against us. And so if you look at how intolerant the individuals have been regarding what Judge Jeanine had said, then you can understand that that is how they go after everybody. It's, you know, it's unacceptable that that person has said that thing and I'm offended and they've got to be taken down. And I'm going, this is America. You have an equal right as everybody else to be offended. That's your constitutional privilege. Be happy that you have it, because we could go to a theocratic state of Christianity only and drive everybody out and drive homosexuals out, drive literally all those who don't comply to our standards. But that's not in our doctrinal design. We don't force people to accept Christ. That's the antithesis of Christianity, if you understand that. And so let me just kind of meander on. I'm just trying to show you that there is zero tolerance. And I hope you get this and I hope you understand this is what we have to look forward to. And I'll make the connection for you in a minute. But if you didn't know, Russia is airlifting military troops and armament into Venezuela. Why? Why do you think that they're doing that? Do you think they've got some play at hand that maybe America is going to be doing something? Do you think it is more in our interest to stabilize Venezuela or stay in Syria? I'll let you ponder on that. I also will let you know that if you didn't know, today, some warships, U.S. warships, sailed through the Strait of Taiwan, that you know, that little piece of water that goes between the island of Taiwan and Taiwan and China. And in doing this, we were telling China that we don't recognize their dominance over Taiwan and the fact that that is international waters because it is more than 12 and a half miles off of their coast. So I think it's it's interesting. But I will say this, that if you're not aware, the fact of the matter is that we are heading, whether you want to believe this or not, we are heading for a direct involvement with China, whether it be a military involvement, something, and who knows what it's going to be. But I can tell you the tensions are rising and China is not liking the fact that we're calling them out at taking advantage of us, getting rich off of us. And as I've been telling you, we've been subsidizing them and the growth of communism throughout the world, and it's got to stop. We cannot continue to do this. So who knows where it's all going to end, but I can tell you this. China is gearing up for war. That is the direction that they're going. They're going to continue to harass us and they're going to wait and wait and wait until we do nothing. And then they're going to try, just like Japan, they're going to try to seize the day or seize the moment. Now, let me get into this Obama thing and the Trump exoneration. during the 2015 campaign leading into the 2016 election, there's no doubt we all knew that Hillary had an email server, that Hillary had classified, Wiener was going down. All of these things were in play, all during the Obama administration. However, at that exact same time when they were really looking, because they, all they were doing was doing damage control, putting out fires. You got to remember, until a person has been tried, actually go to court and sit in the judgment seat, they do not have the protection of double jeopardy. So even though Comey did, you know, he actually did us a favor because he didn't allow the prosecution and or a case to go forward with the kangaroo court to exonerate her, then she would have been free to not ever have to face the true justice that she needs to face. All of these culprits have, you know, kept themselves out of court, which means that if we can get them, the evidence is there. It's just a matter of getting the will to get them into court. We can actually convict and send them away. And, oh, if you think Hollywood and if you think the mainstream media is spinning now just over the fact that they couldn't find anything on Trump, what do you think they're going to do when their prince and princess Clintons actually go down in flames? I will tell you that when you start looking at the evidence, there is no doubt in my mind that the Obama administration, remember the Lynch tarmac meeting with Clinton? Remember all of the things that they did for Clinton? There is enough evidence. There's no doubt in my mind that we should actually go after Obama and impeach him. People say, oh, you can't impeach a former president. Yes, you can, because the concept of impeachment was over the office of the president. But since we have changed, because in the old days, when the president was, when he was no longer president, he was no longer involved at all with government. He became a civilian. However, that changed. We gave them a permanent detail of security. They get involved in what's going on. They get, if not weekly, monthly briefs and so forth. They have a lot of consumption of tax dollars. It is a permanent position, if you want to call it, of royalty, whatever you want to call it. He needs to be stripped of all of those blessings. He needs to be stripped of every single entitlement that a retired president should get, and the process should be impeachment, because he did all of these things while he was in office, and it happened on his watch. He needs to see his day in court so that justice can be delivered. And I'm telling you, you can look at everything that they did, how they did the damage control, and how everything played out. The ends justify the means. In other words, they were doing anything and everything they could to get us into a position where they actually had us in a stranglehold to take us down. They have no regard for your individual liberty, and they have no regard for your individual sovereignty. They want to control you, and that's precisely the direction they and the establishment Republicans, the rhinos, are doing. That's why we need to go rhino hunting. I also want to give you this, because this is going to connect the dots here. Republicans and the conservatives have been mocking the progressives ever since the loss of that election, laughing at them, crying, and those types of things. And though it may be insensitive, we have not gathered them into camps and, you know, forced fed them, you know, gruel and that type of thing. But I'm telling you, we will rue the day if we do not hold these folks accountable, because when the progressives, and I'm telling you, they're over there taking notes on what we have been doing. And when they can ascend to power and full control over the House, the Senate, as well as the presidency, because that day will come, you will see how intolerant and how they will vindicate themselves. Because they're going to go just like what is going down in New Zealand. If you send anything via, if they're going to turn on NSA and they are going to come after every American that even speaks out. Just like in China, anybody that speaks out evil against the government or what have you, you're considered an enemy of the state. Boom. And if you love the Constitution and you talk about the Constitution, you'll be considered an enemy of the state. That's the direction we will go if we do not hold these folks accountable. So you better be very scared of the day when Trump leaves office and nobody's done perp walks, because that means we're all just waiting to be gathered up, sent into camps, or what have you. I'm just telling you, that's how it plays out through history. If we do not take note and learn from these historical events of how they have shot and killed the educated and the patriots with Khmer Rouge, are you kidding me? Pol Pot was a expletive, expletive. When we come back, I will wrap this up so we can get into Madison's Virginia resolutions. We'll be right back after this. Thank you so much, folks. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open. So one of the things that I've really neglected, and I have to say this because I recognize that it will be the heartland of America that will save America and its Constitution. And currently what's going on right now in the heartland is that flooding. And I just want to send a heartfelt concern, and you're in our prayers, Nebraska, and all of those downriver. Apparently, this isn't over, and it could get a lot worse. They're saying that this can go on for months. And I'm just, I hope that we can make sure we minimize all the loss and damages and so forth. But it's one of those things that Mother Nature can unleash its fury with all the snow that they got. As a matter of fact, I talked to Erin. She's in Kansas, and they got pounded pretty heavily by snow this year. So anyway, I just want to send out my heartfelt concerns and our prayers for them. Anyway, I'm not sure if you heard, but a fire broke out in a California mosque with a mysterious note referring to the Christchurch attack. And so it's interesting because it was a small fire. It was caught pretty relatively quick and it didn't do much damage. And so this kind of seems like maybe one of those cases that before they start looking for outlaws, I think it might be best to start looking at the in-laws, if you know what I mean, because this could be a ruse to actually, go after and start scaring people to kind of shut up and clamor up so that they no longer, become the opposition to, because this was, like I said, in California. I forget what town, but this could be just one of those tactics that they're using, Takia, of deceit in making people think, oh, well, shoot, we have to go after anybody that says disparaging comments because it could break out in another firefight. I don't see many progressives going after the Islamic community because those seem to be the ones that tend to, go berserk. Anywho, one more thing I wanted to make note of, and because we've been hearing in the polls, and it's just, I haven't had a chance to say this yet, but we know that there's just an absolute high percentage of young adults who are enamored by such a destructive form of government as socialism and communism. And so the question I have is this just a coincidence that so many of this age group, under 30 and below, so many are just enthralled with this concept of socialism and communism. Why is it that the age group of their parents is not, so ideologically wired? Why is it that we're finding that it's just this unique aberration, this unique outlier in our society that kids are so enamored with socialism and communism that they want to get rid of their liberties. They want to get rid of their Second Amendment rights, their First Amendment. They're using their First Amendment rights so they can shut everybody up. Why? I'm here to tell you, my friends, this is an indictment of our education system or the national indoctrination. I am here to tell you that this is all a part of the plan. That is one of the reasons why the progressives are trying to get all the adults, 16 years old, if they could go down to 12, they would. And here we're trying to raise the age of, them, their ability to hold a gun. I have always said, and this is the fact, only government can kill with efficiency. And so what we want to do is put in the hands of these children the controls of government so that they can go do killing for us. But we want to raise the age for their ability to protect themselves from harm. Just like in that Christchurch shooting, how a concealed carry weapon was used in putting down that guy. The fact of the matter is, what we're looking at is the prime pumping for a Bolshevik revolution. I've been telling you this. Illegal aliens are being pumped into the electorate. They want to get these young idiots in to, we need to raise the age for voting as well to 21. I don't care if we want to raise the age to 21 for service, then okay, we'll take a hit in manpower for a couple of years. But it is far better to back out than it is to dive down to stupidity because these kids do not understand enough to be able to vote. I'm sorry. As a matter of fact, Obama's already raised the age. If they're not old enough that by age 26 that we have to cover their butts for health care, they shouldn't be able to vote. If your kid is receiving and on a parent's health care coverage, they should not be able to vote until they can take care of their sorry butts, right? Isn't that how you feel? I think so. Anyway, if you want to opine, you want to get involved, you want to make a comment, send me an email, info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. Now, let me set this up. As you know, the federal government in 1798 wrote a couple of acts and laws to inhibit and restrict the state and their people from being able to say disparaging comments about the government, about the president, and so forth. because they knew that they were coming up in an election cycle and they wanted to make sure that they were protected, that they couldn't go after these folks. So they passed these laws that violated the First Amendment. That's why I read the Kentucky resolutions. What ended up happening was Jefferson rode out to Kentucky, and the reason why he was the one instead of Madison, because he was the vice president at the time. He knew Madison did not have the health and stamina to get on a horse and be able to get out there in time, you know, as fast as possible, so that they could actually meet up with the session of the Kentucky legislature so that they could start and initiate a revolt by the states. So what Jefferson did was he got out there, they audited the Constitution and identified how these acts violated the First Amendment, the 10th Amendment, the actual Constitution, the enumerated powers, the necessary and proper, and so forth and so on. I mean, he went through very thoroughly identifying in what ways and what facets the Constitution was being violated by the federal government. Then he called upon other states to join in Resolution 8. He said, we want to set up committees of conference and correspondence. That's not just setting up a committee locally. That's a call that all the states set up committees to correspond so that they can actually start discussing what the heck's going on and what they're going to do about it, because they were sounding the alarm. Madison went down to Virginia, which wasn't that far, right? In 1798, Washington, D.C. was where it is today, right there on the Potomac. And so he rode down to Richland. Wasn't that far, but it probably took him a while to get down there. And he assisted in writing the Virginia Resolution, which was the response from the Virginia legislatures to the Kentucky Resolution. And so this is what he said. And again, this happened in December. So the July was when the acts were passed. October was when the first resolution from the Kentucky Resolution was passed and promulgated. And this was actually sent out in December. So it's just a matter of a couple of months, boom, the first resolution, a couple of months later, boom, the Virginia Resolution. And so this is what Madison says. He says, resolved that the General Assembly of Virginia doth unequivocally express a firm resolution to maintain and defend the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of this state against every aggression from either foreign or domestic, and that they will support the government of the United States in all measures by the former. This assembly, and he doesn't do a resolved on every single one. This is just a resolved and then boom, boom, boom. And so he says that this assembly, this is the second paragraph, that this assembly most solemnly declares a warm attachment to the Union of States to maintain which it pledges all its power, and that for this end it is their duty to watch over and oppose every infraction of those principles which constitute the only basis of that union, because a faithful observance of them can alone secure its existence and the public happiness. Now, I want to go on an aside, because there has been a lot of analysis regarding these documents, and most of the analysis is incorrect. And what I'm saying is that there have been a lot of people currently, and even before, I think in the 1830s, a gentleman kind of did some analysis, and most everybody's kind of rode on the backs of that gentleman who penned these articles with the name of Locke, interestingly enough. But this man basically asserts that all Madison was trying to do was nullify the laws. No, I don't think so. As a matter of fact, if you understand what Madison wrote in 1800, when he actually wrote a follow-up on how he lamented over the fact that the rest of the states didn't join, then if you understand why he lamented, you can understand precisely what the heck was going on. That he was really distraught with the fact that the other states didn't recognize their responsibility and didn't rise to the occasion in holding the federal government accountable to their contract. And so that's he comes right back and he answers some of the criticism regarding what he did with the Virginia resolutions. And so, as you can tell, we're at a hard break. I've got more meat coming for you. So you want to clear your plate now and please stay tuned. We'll get right back into these Virginia resolutions when we get back. Thank you so much. Folks, Red State Talk Radio has brought back its monthly newsletter. I know everyone gets a lot of emails, but this is not a daily or weekly newsletter. It's a monthly newsletter. So you will not be overwhelmed with a plethora of emails from Red State Talk Radio. Come on, it's only once a month. I'll be contributing a constitutional perspective to one of the current issues to help everyone see an alternative perspective, or what I believe would be a framer's perspective regarding the issue to help us maintain a constitutional paradigm. I will also provide information regarding a significant historical context to the time of year so that we can remember our history, so we will not be doomed to repeat the inevitable failings from forgetting our past and origins. Just go to Red State Talk Radio and sign up for the newsletter. This way you can get a focused view of what is going on in the Republic as well as what is going on at Red State Talk Radio. Thank you. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. So, when we start looking at the two paragraphs we just read, first off, Madison basically says, hey, we have this affinity or this this firm resolution to maintain and defend the Constitution and our unity. And he also points out that they, as states, have to step in against the aggression of foreign or domestic governments. He also states that they, again, this is kind of all the warm and fuzzy stuff, that, you know, they do have this affinity for the attachment of the Union and that they need to oppose every infraction of its principles and so forth. This next paragraph is where he really gets into, I think, a little bit more of a call to action. He says, this assembly doth explicitly and peremptorily declare that it views the powers of the federal government as resulting from the compact to which the states are parties as limited by the plain sense and intention of the instrument constituting the compact, as no further valid that they are authorized by the grants enumerated in that compact, and that in case of deliberate, palpable, and dangerous exercise of other powers not granted by the said compact, the states who are parties thereto have the right and are duty bound to interpose, not, so you got to understand, interpose is not nullifying. Nullifying says we don't recognize that. Interpose is an active or an action that the states actually step out and stop. And this is what he says again. Have the right and are duty bound to interpose for arresting the progress of evil, and for maintaining within their respective limits the authorities, rights, and liberties appertaining to them. And so this is where he actually, you know, really steps out there and makes this very clear that we have to take action as a state. Now, why, again, why is he writing this? He's writing this in response to Kentucky. So the Virginia legislatures are sending back out to Kentucky their response to Jefferson's resolutions. And this also goes out to everybody else so that all the other states now saw Kentucky has called for action. Virginia has now called for action. And so he goes on and says that the General Assembly doth also express its deep regret that a spirit has in sundry instances or a variety of instances been manifested by the federal government to enlarge its powers by forced constructions of the constitutional charter which defines them. And the implications have appeared of a design to expound certain general phrases which have been copied from their very limited grant of power in the former Articles of Confederation, where were the less liable to be misconstrued, so as to destroy the meaning and effect of the particular enumeration which necessarily explains and limits the general phrases, and so as to consolidate the states by degrees into one sovereignty, the obvious tendency and inevitable consequence of which would be to transform the present Republican form of the United States into an absolute or at best mixed monarchy. And so he's clearly stating that the federal government is going down this direction that is violating the compact or the Constitution in misconstruing and misapplying, you know, because he makes note that, hey, we just basically copied the exact same limitations from the Articles of Confederation into this Constitution, and they're destroying the fundamental meaning. What the only thing I don't understand why Madison didn't do this, other than the fact that they just didn't understand Constitution, or I should say contract law. It wasn't as mature back then as it is today. I think only in 1821 and in 1817 where Madison really kind of reflects in a contractual sense on the Constitution and how it was interpreted in the ratification debates. But clearly he could have said right here in this paragraph, and I think he missed an opportunity to point to how they defined the Constitution in the state ratification debates. Don't know why he didn't do that, other than the fact that it may have been dialogue. You know, we can only guess, we can only assume as to what, you know, and why he did some of the things he did, right? And so I'm armchair quarterbacking, of course. And anyway, he moves on and says that the General Assembly doth particularly protest against the palpable and alarming infractions of the Constitution in the two late cases of the Alien and Sedition Acts passed at the last session of Congress, the first of which exercises a power nowhere delegated to the federal government, and which by uniting legislative and judicial powers of the executive subverts the general principles of free government, as well as the particular organization and positive provisions of the federal Constitution, and the other of which acts exercise in like manner a power not delegated by the Constitution, but on the contrary, expressly and positively forbidden by one of the amendments thereto, a power which more than any other ought to produce universal alarm. So he's really saying, hey, everybody needs to be alarmed with the fact that they're actually violating the First Amendment by controlling speech. Not only should we be alarmed with this other thing called the violations of the Constitution, because they're taking powers that were not enumerated, they're consolidating powers into the executive, and they're, you know, stepping on the freedom of speech and the freedom of association and expression. Anyway, he goes on, because it is leveled against the right of freely examining public characters and measures and of free communication among the people thereon, which has been justly deemed the only effectual guardian of every other right. So here, my friends, is how Madison has kind of laid this all out, that they are in this strict violation. The point here is they were taking action. It was just literally two men that went and spoke to, educated the state legislatures and got them to sign on to these concepts. And the sad thing is the rest of the states, because they, you got to understand, who were the Federalists? The Federalists were left to Hamilton and those who wanted to aggrandize. The interesting thing is some of the anti-Federalists who identified these problems that would occur from consolidating these powers, these anti-Federalists were now on board with consolidating powers, and because they were at the trough of power in Congress. Where was Henry? Henry may have passed away. I know he passed away around the end of the century. So Henry may have passed on, but there were a lot of other Federalists who all of a sudden, or I should say anti-Federalists, who were joining with the Federalists just because of their avarice for power. They were just becoming more and more consumed with, you know, here's a great opportunity that we might be able to self-aggrandize. And that was very alarming. That's why, as a result of this failure, Madison and Jefferson sounded the alarm in a political grassroots movement effort in establishing the Republican Party. Most people refer to it as the Democratic Party, but it was the Republican Party. Anybody that wants to argue that, I just ask that you read Jefferson's first inaugural address when he gets up after beating the Federalist and after beating Adams and unseating him to bring the nation together. He says, we're all Republicans, we are all Federalists. He didn't say we're all Democrats. He didn't say we're all Democratic Republicans. He used the word Democratic as like an adjective. It was a word that helped describe the type or form of Republican, that we used a democratic process in our Republican form of government. And so it was just a style that was added, and the progressives have been able to obfuscate the fact and the truth that our founders, Jefferson and Madison, were the first in creating the Republican Party. Most people look at Lincoln as the guy. He was a despot. And I know that this is the time of year where people are going and celebrating the Lincoln Day dinners. What should be happening is we should be celebrating the Madison Day dinners and the Jefferson Day dinners. They want, and the reason why the Uniparty kind of looks, everybody on both sides look at Lincoln as a great guy because he built big government to what it is today, and it was all done unconstitutionally. I know there's lots of people that take offense when you start talking and disparaging comments regarding Lincoln. Lincoln did some great things, but he did some really bad things too. He was wrong in lots of ways. He should have made the Civil War right from the get-go, not a civil war, but he should have made it an action to abolish slavery. We would have saved a lot of lives, and we would have probably been able to rejoin the Union in a far more amicable way. But I am G.R. Mobley. We are Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless, and we'll be back tomorrow. I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to, so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution.